Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. I'm here with Sarah Regara, who's a proud mother, an engineer, and a self-tracker. Sarah, that was a brilliant talk.
Thank you.
Just really compelling. I sent some very enthusiastic tweets during your talk.
Oh, I need to check them out later.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't have time during the talk.
I thought, yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah. No, don't worry.
So, your story about self-tracking and self-care was really inspirational to me.
Thank you.
I have type 1 diabetes, I have depression, and it was really inspirational that you've taken your kind of engineering background. Tell us about this finger tracking work that you presented.
Yeah, so I have Parkinson's disease, and one of the main symptoms is slowness of movement, which then the medications help with, but you have to time them very carefully to get the optimal effect. If you take them too close together, you will get something called dyskinesia, which is a very uncomfortable, constant moving thing that you don't want to have too much of. And if you take them too far apart, it won't get the effect you want to, because you will be very stiff and slow movement. So this finger tapping test that I use to find my optimum timing is something that I came across in a doctoral thesis quite a few years ago now. And I started using it in my everyday life to manage my Parkinson's disease. I don't have to do it often these days, because by doing it I learned how my body should feel like when I'm optimally medicated. So by doing the finger tapping, I learned to know my body better.
I think there's something about this kind of research. This is kind of N of one research.
Definitely, yeah.
Something about this kind of service user, lived experience research that answers questions that we can't answer from conventional research.
Yeah, I agree. And that's also where my criticism only was careful from stage of the RCTs, the randomized controlled trials. I don't think it's instead of RCTs. I think it's a complement that we can use to learn more about the lived experience and what really works. And then it can feed into the RCTs and the vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. But what needs to change in science publishing, particularly, for this kind of work to get more respect?
A lot, unfortunately. I think I know myself by experience how difficult it is to get these kind of unconventional studies published. It doesn't really fit the current evaluations and review processes of journals, which means it doesn't get published, so it doesn't get known. It's sort of a self-fulfilling downward spiral, because if the reviewers don't know, don't understand it, they will never get through review, and that's what happens often.
So, but why is that? Because I remember 10 years ago looking at the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine's rewritten hierarchy of evidence, and on top of systematic reviews of randomized controlled trials, they had put N of one trials.
What do you mean? Did they put them as at the highest level?
Absolutely.
Oh, I need to check that out, because that's not something that has really spread through the system, I must say.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess this is something which is understood by people that work in academia and understand evidence very well, but not necessarily in the publishing world.
Yeah, that's probably true. And I think it takes a lot of... it takes a critical mass to get that sort of shifted. Because whether we like it or not, academia is a very hierarchical and elitistic world, so it's basically very difficult to change such a world. So you need to reach critical mass, I think. But I think more and more people are seeing the benefits of N-of-1 and similar and lived experience. But it's still a challenge to work in the area to get published.
And are you unusual in this field, do you think? Are there lots of people like you doing this kind of work?
I wouldn't say there's lots of people, but there are more and more people trying, inspired by my work, but also inspired by other people in this field. It's still a small field, but it's increasing, I would say.
So are they people working specifically in Parkinson's? What other disease areas are people exploring?
So a few in Parkinson's, but I mean, I sometimes say I have diabetes envy. because in diabetes there are very clear objective measures that you can use. And then I know it's not as simple as that. I know it's more complicated. But in Parkinson's and lots of the other brain-related or even behavior-related illnesses, there are no objective measures. Nothing you can measure and say, this number is me, this number is you. So, and that makes it more challenging to actually do quote-unquote science on it. I don't think it's impossible, but you need to be more creative about it.
And how do you see the field evolving over the next few years? What are the barriers to this kind of work being wider understood?
One of the barriers definitely is the publications. And this big challenge is involved with getting these kind of works published. Because if you can't get it out there in these journals that are considered the respectable ones, it won't spread. It's as simple as that, unfortunately.
It was a really, really compelling talk. I urge people to watch it on the live stream. It's my favourite talk of the conference so far.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you very much. It was nice. Thank you. I'm very pleased to hear that.